mostly the Proverbs of Solomon, except for perhaps the last two chapters, although, as I've mentioned before, some people think that he penned those as well and just used a couple pen names, Lemuel and was it Agur? Is that the one who does Proverbs 30? Wisest man who ever lived, save Christ. This is how chapter 4 starts. It says, "Hear, ye children, the instruction of a father, and attend to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine, forsake ye not my law." Hear, look, kids, listen to your dad and attend. Give your attention to no understanding, for I give you good doctrine, forsake ye not my law. He speaks frequently throughout Proverbs as if to his kids. And sometimes it's hard to hear the words of a father. You know, my kids, we do the library quite frequently, and one of the books that seems to make it home on a regular basis is some of the Calvin and Hobbes books. And my favorite part of Calvin and Hobbes, if you've ever seen those comic strips, is when Calvin starts asking his dad questions, and his dad just starts making it up and goes on and on and on about why is the sky blue, and he just makes up all this crazy stuff. But when you're a kid, you're a real young kid, you think your parents know everything. I mean, you just, and they tell you something, and you just take it as the gospel truth, and you just believe it. Then there gets to be a time when, you know, you get into your junior high and high school years where you think they're stupid and don't have a clue about anything that means anything at all. And then you get out on your own. I know for me it was when I actually had my own house. I started to reappreciate how much my parents knew. And calling dad to ask him how to fix stuff and calling mom to ask her how to cook stuff. And it's amazing, all the stuff. Your parents suddenly get wiser again as you get older. Some of us had parents that did some very foolish things, and Solomon would certainly fall into that camp. Yet what he wrote here under the inspiration of the Lord is definitely good doctrine, and it's worth knowing. He says in verse 3, "I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother." Remember, David, a man after God's own heart, was his dad. He says, "I was my father's son," and his mom was Bathsheba. Okay? You know David and Bathsheba. You know what went on there. But yet even within that, Solomon says in verse 4, "He taught me also, and he said unto me, let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments and live." You know, one thing that I find myself saying, well, we recently swapped kitchen tables with my mother, or pulled her cast offs as she got another one, and with it came the antique chairs that when I was growing up, you know, as a kid, my tendency was just sit in the chair and lean back. In fact, I still do that. I lean back in the chairs. And whenever I did that, my mother had a stock phrase she would say, because they were antique chairs she'd got, I don't know, somewhere. Those chairs have been around for 100 years. It'd be a shame if they were broken now. Those chairs have been around for 100 years. And it got to be almost a joke because we heard it so much. Those chairs have been around for 100 years. I have those chairs now. And I'm going to say to my kids, those chairs have been around for 100 years. It'd be a shame. In fact, they've been around for 120 or 30 now. I find myself saying the things that my parents said to me, some of which I laughed at and I ridiculed when I was younger, but now as I get older, I'm saying the same things. And it's interesting to think about the fact that as parents, even those of us who are parents with very young kids, on some level, we're teaching our grandchildren. You understand that? You tell your kids something, and they're going to take that, and they're going to tell their kids. And so, you know, here is Solomon saying, my daddy taught me, and he said the same basic thing, let your heart retain. Don't forget my words. Keep my commandments and live. And then he's going to tell us some things that his father told him, namely, verse 5, get wisdom. And the language is buy it. Spend what you got to spend to get it. Get understanding. Forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth. Get. And you wonder, why did Solomon ask when God appeared to him and asked him, "What, you know, ask what you want and I'll give it to you." When Solomon said, "I need wisdom," probably part of the reason why is his dad had drilled into his head, "Boy, you need wisdom. Especially after the mistakes I made with your mother, you need wisdom. Get wisdom. Do whatever you have to do." It's like playing Monopoly. You guys play Monopoly? We used to do it when I was a kid. We'd have marathon games of Monopoly. Some people have the strategy, and there's different strategies in Monopoly, right? And some people have the strategy of, "I'm just going to amass as much money as possible," you know? And there are other, you know, "I'm going to try to get free parking. I'm going to try to go past Go. I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to sell my stuff to get it." There are others who take the strategy that I think is the winning strategy of, "I'm going to acquire all the property I possibly can." Because you might have all the money in the beginning, but once I got the land and I start building on it, I'm going to suck you dry. And it doesn't matter how much you have. And the best strategy is to buy that which is most important, because later on it is going to pay huge dividends. And it's the same way with wisdom. He's saying literally, buy wisdom. Don't forget it. Don't decline from the words. "Forsake her not," he personifies wisdom, makes it sound like a woman, "and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee." Forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. I mean, and look, coming from Solomon, who made huge mistakes with, you know, 700 wives and 300 concubines, from David, who made huge mistakes with Bathsheba, we can learn from their mistakes. When my dad died, one of the things I got after he died was his pickup truck, his plow truck. And with that plow truck, I mentioned this before, he was a good record keeper, so I got this folder that was like the purchase of the truck and then all of the maintenance records. It was one of those things he bought from Jack Lloyd over at the little store over there when Jack was selling cars, and it had all the maintenance stuff. And I remember my father saying before he bought that truck, he said, "Yeah, I prayed about it, and then I bought it anyway." "I prayed about it, and then I bought it anyway." And I think he paid like $4,000 for this truck. And I had in receipts for this truck well over $4,000 worth of work that he had done. And when I got the truck, it was still a piece of junk. And the thing never worked right. And you were always under it, beaten on the starter because the connection was bad. And I know at least one auto mechanic told him, "I think this thing's been underwater. I think you bought a vehicle that actually was in a flood, you know?" And it's like, I prayed about it and I did it anyway. And we all have those things that we've prayed about and we've done them anyway, you know? And there are a lot of us who have to go to our kids at some point in our life and say, "Look, son, I know you're tempted to do this thing. I did this thing. And before you say to me, 'Well, you did it, why can't I?' learn from my scar tissue. Forsake her not." Because that's what we do. We know wisdom, but then we forsake it to do what we want. And it says, if you don't, she'll preserve you. Love her, she shall keep thee. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get understanding. The idea is, with all thy getting, with everything you've got, get understanding. Exalt her, and she shall promote thee. She shall bring thee to honor when thou dost embrace her. She shall give to thy head an ornament of grace. A crown of glory shall she deliver to thee. There is nothing more beautiful morally than wisdom. Certainly for any of you single ladies, gentlemen, you know, find someone who appreciates godly wisdom. Find a godly man. My daughter, well, I'm going to find yours. But all you other ladies who are looking on your own, find a godly guy. Find a godly woman. Find someone who appreciates wisdom, who listens to the wisdom of their elders, who listens to the wisdom of the word of the Lord, because there is nothing more beautiful in the long run. You know, beauty fades, but wisdom, it's a crown of glory. Hear, O my son, receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. Because sin, we talked about it last week, there are sins that have a tendency to kill you, to suck the life out of you. I have taught thee in the way of wisdom. I have led thee in right paths. I like that. Not only have I taught thee in the way of wisdom, I have led thee in right paths. Because, you know, especially for us dads, the idea is to go there before them. You know what they say, a lot more is caught than is taught. And sometimes, again, we learn from going down the wrong path, and it's better to see the scar tissue someone else amassed going down the wrong path. But, you know, as dads, we need to be walking those things that we tell our kids to do. When thou goest, and the tenses are as thou goest, thy steps shall not be straightened or held back. And when or as thou runnest, thou shalt not stumble. Because the guidance, in the guidance of the Lord, and you see this throughout Scripture, is as you go, as you go, as you go. As we're walking, he guides us. As we're moving, because we're always moving down one path or another. And it's a lot easier to steer something in motion than it is in its standing still without the miracle of hydraulics. And God's guiding many times come as we go. But if we walk in his paths, we're not going to be held back. We're not going to stumble. Take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her as if she's your life. You guys ride, most of you guys have probably flown on a plane before, right? Right, you've ridden on a plane. I've ridden on a plane. You know what happens at the beginning of your plane ride. You get in, you find your seat, you cram all your stuff in the overhead bin, and then in front of you is the barf bag and the little instruction card and the Sky Mall magazine, you know. So you pull that out, and then as the flight gets ready to go, some of them now do it via video, some of it, but they still have the steward or stewardess stand up there with the little dummy seat belt to show you how to buckle a seat belt in case you've never done it before in your life. And they tell you, you know, about in the case of a rapid descent, the oxygen mask will drop and you'll put it over. In case of, you know, ditching in the water, your seat cushion can be used as a flotation device. You're not paying attention to that. If you've ridden a flight, but if the plane actually started to drop, all of a sudden, you'd want to wish you'd paid attention. Wait a minute. Where's the card? What? When does it drop? I float to. How do I get the seat cushion on? If you really thought the plane was going to go down, you'd have paid more attention. Well, in life, the plane always goes down. At some time or other, it always goes down. And so the idea is to pay attention to this stuff, for she is thy life. Because of that, he says, enter not into the path of the wicked and go not the way of evil men. Avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it and pass away. Notice this is, look, there's a path of the righteous, there's a path of the wicked. Don't go a few steps down that path, because that's what people have a tendency to do. Or they want to put one foot on one path and one foot on the other and spend some time walking on this one and then jump over. And it may be for a while that the paths are close enough that you can sort of hop back and forth. But they are going to diverge. And the idea is you don't want to get sucked onto the wrong path and not come back. You don't even want to start there. That's why he says, don't enter in. Don't go that way. Avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it. The danger is sudden, and it's best to never even enter in. And then speaking of evil men, he says, for they sleep not except they have done mischief, and their sleep is taken away unless they cause some to fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness. They drink the wine of violence. That wicked men, their very sustenance is based on evil, about doing wicked things. And so why would you want to be on their path? Because that's what they live and breathe. And so, and yeah, it may seem appealing for a while to walk with the bad guy or the bad girl. But there's no life there. The way of the wicked is as darkness. Well, excuse me, the path of the just is as the shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day. It's brighter as you continue on it. Contrasted with the way of the wicked, it's darkness. And they know at what they stumble. Could be a pothole, could be a canyon. They don't know. They're stumbling around in the dark. My son, attend to my words. Listen up, boy. Incline thy ears unto my saying. Let them not depart from thine eyes. Keep them in the midst of thine heart. You know, pay attention and then act. And all of these words, let them. There's going to be, it's a lot in this chapter and the next chapter and a bunch of other ones. Keep, let. It's an active thing. It's something that you need to work at. It's not something that just happens. And you know, you need to pay attention and then act with intention. Like, you want this stuff to happen. Don't let it depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart. You've got to hold on to them. For they are life to those that find them. In health to all their flesh. Life and health. You know, when you're young, you really don't appreciate either of those things. The fragility of life, the blessing of good health. And I don't think today's video games really help a whole lot, because there's a reset button, you know? I can take the jump. I can take the crazy path. I can, you know, run recklessly into battle because I'll just, you know, find a health pack. I haven't found the health pack in my life. I don't know how it works. I mean, there's no instant just drink this potion and suddenly you've got full hit points again. I've got a lot of hit points taken out of me and I don't seem to be getting them back. They seem to be going faster and faster. There's no reset in life. He says, keep thy heart in verse 23 with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. I mean, that is such a gem. That's the kind of thing that you should put on your refrigerator. That's the thing you should write on your mirror. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. You know, we're told everything revolves around the heart. Certainly you want to bury this stuff in your mind, all right? And those of us who have been Christians for a while and have spent time in the Word, it's not a lack of knowing, is it? Is it ever a lack of knowing? It's not. It's a lack of doing. And it's not because we don't know what we should do. It's because we don't want to do what we should do. Because our heart, we set our heart on something else other than on Him and on His path and on His word. We get caught up in enticed with the things of this world. And we set our heart on them. And our heart has a way of making a convert of our mind. That once your heart is fixed on something, it can change you. And you can, your heart, it's deceitful, it's desperately wicked, who can know it? So that it lies to you. And it tells you, well, that is really God. She really is God's will for your life. Because why else would He have put her in your path? I mean, I know you're married, but really, He sent, because she's your soulmate. And you messed up, and now God has sent her to you as a secretary because she really will understand you. People say stupid things like that to themselves. Like, they really will be better. Keep your heart. Guard it. And, you know, ladies especially, don't give your heart lightly. Don't give your heart lightly. Because we're scum, and we'll say whatever we have to say. We really will. We're very manipulative. It's almost like it comes at birth. It's almost like we somehow know whether you're one who will respond to guilt, or you're one who will respond to pressure, or you're one who will respond to kindness, or you're one who will respond to excitement, whatever it is. And guys have a way of preying on you. Don't give your heart up unless He's wise and He's godly. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Put away from thee a froward mouth. That's a distorted, a perverse mouth. And perverse lips put far from thee. Of course, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Keep your heart, keep that pure. Your mouth will be pure as well. Let thine eyes look right on, and thine eyelids look straight before thee. You've seen the plow horse, right? And they put the blinders on the plow horse. They do that because when the horse can look to the left or to the right, it'll go in the direction that it looks. And you want a straight path. You don't want your horse looking around or your donkey looking around. You want it looking one way because that's the way it's got to go. I think we need biblical or spiritual blinders many times so that we are only focused on the main thing. Sometimes with the kids, and we homeschool the kids, especially, you know, boys are more difficult than girls. I don't know if you found that. Little boys don't pay attention well. I don't know if you know that. And, you know, I know there are labels, and I look, ADD, ADHD, ABC, XYZ, whatever. And I understand there are. I'm not dissing all of that. But a normal little boy is inattentive, and he's hyperactive. He just is, you know. Just a normal one is that way. And sometimes you got to say, no, look me in the eye. Okay. What are you going to do? Go upstairs, get your clothes. Okay, you're going upstairs, you're going to get your shoes, right? Look at me, say back to me what it is I just told you. Because you know, God forbid there's a Lego between them and the stairs. Because if they pass by that, or a ball, or a pet, it's gone. Right out the window. And an hour later, where are you? Oh, where are your shoes? I forgot. I didn't know. It wasn't. Well, we're the same way as adults. It's just different stuff. I'm not drawn to Legos. They put cars in front of me, or guitars, or half-naked women, or other things they use. It's like fishing. You know, those of you who are fishermen, you go out and with fish like bass, you don't necessarily use live bait. You use shiny things. You don't even have to hide the hook. I mean, some fish are smart, and you have to hide it in what looks like tentacles, or put it inside of the worm so they can't see it. Bass, bear hook, shiny. Just throw it out there, bish, drag it by them, and it doesn't matter where they're swimming, they'll see that and say, that might be pretty good. I think I'll go after it. And the same thing with us. They'll take, you know, whether it's a car or a boat or whatever, a half-naked woman, drag it by you. And it's, wow, you can just get pulled right in that direction. Let your eyes look right on. Let thine eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Ponder the path. Think about where you're walking, the path that you're on. In a society, and I am as guilty as anyone, Sundays it's very hard for me. I mean, today is a good day. All is right with the world because the Patriots did win, and I did watch the game this afternoon. I'll probably go home tonight and watch the Colts are playing somebody, and I'll probably watch it because I like to watch football, and I like to, on a Sunday night, I'll be honest with you, after a day at church, I like to go home and just not think. That's what I like to do. I like to amuse myself and not think. Not think about work this coming week, not think about the problems of people I've prayed for. I don't see a lot of direction in the Bible to not think. In fact, I see direction like ponder the path of your feet. Think about where you're at. Think about things. Let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand or to the left. Remove thy foot from evil. Remove thy foot from evil. Isn't that brilliant advice? Hey, you're in a bad place? Leave. Wow, that's rocket science right there. I mean, who would have thought? But yeah, they got to tell us that 50 times in the book of Proverbs to flee. In fact, prepare to flee. You know, I love the story of Joseph, even though it seemed like, I'm sure from Joseph's eyes, everything was going against him, that God had abandoned him. He was sold into slavery by his brothers. He ends up as a slave in Potiphar's house in Egypt, and Potiphar's wife is hitting on him nonstop. And he's so, you know, the Lord has blessed him so that everything's going great in the house. Everything that he touches just works out well. Potiphar trusts him so well that he doesn't consider, he just lets him do whatever he wants with his house because he knows whatever Joseph manages, he prospers at. And here's Potiphar's wife hitting on him all the time, trying to get him alone. Finally manages to get him in a place where he's alone in the house with her, and she tries to seduce him. And he runs. She grabs him by the robe or whatever it is they wear, and he runs right out of it to get away because he had planned. And see, what happens is if you let your heart make a convert of your mind, as you start thinking about something. I mean, I'd never do it, but, you know, like the lottery, just imagine. I mean, wouldn't it be cool? I mean, obviously, I'd never do it, but boys, it would be pretty nice. And so you practice it in your mind, and you practice it, and you practice it, and you practice it in your mind, but I'll never do it. And then when the time comes, you find out what every martial artist in the world knows. You do, in an emergency, exactly what you've practiced. If you're on the ground and someone's going for your neck and you've practiced it, you put your chin down and you try to pull their hand away. That's what you do. Somebody punches at your face, you duck your chin and you try to put your hand up. That's what you do. And they practice, you know, you've seen the movie, Danielson, wax on, wax off, in, out, paint the fence, sun the floor, in, out, you know. And you do it over and over again and you get this muscle memory so that then when someone strikes a blow, you know the block. And if you've practiced in your mind, if I get in a situation where I'm alone with a woman, I got to flee. If I'm in temptation, I got to flee. You'll do that. If you practice in your mind doing it with a thought, but I'll never really do it, you won't flee. You'll do it. You'll do what you practice in your mind. Remove your foot from evil. I know you know all this. I know this, but I need to hear it over and over again. And we come to chapter 5. In 5, 6, and 7, he's going to deal a lot with sexual sin. He puts that right in the beginning of Proverbs. And, you know, he's going to talk about adultery, infidelity. Chapter 5, it's very disappointing. Chapter 6 is very destructive. Chapter 7, it's very deadly. And even though, look, I know some of you guys aren't married. You may be someday. There's a lot of lessons because human nature is human nature. And you can see the attacks and the way they come. And it carries over to more than just sexual situations. It says, my son, attend unto my wisdom. Literally, the language means prick up your ears. You've seen a horse or like a dog. You know, your dog's just doing his thing and you go, and all of a sudden, boom, those two ears go right, unless mine's got these floppy ears. But a pincher or whatever, the ears go right forward. A horse, they turn their ears to which way they're supposed to go. Bow thine ear to my understanding. Listen carefully. Turn them my way that thou mayest regard discretion, that thy lips may keep knowledge. Regard it. Pay attention to it. You may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman, that strange woman, drop as a honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. The idea of a strange woman is a foreign or literally a profane woman. It was, in many instances, it's speaking of a prostitute. But the overarching idea is the stranger, the one outside of God's will, who is leading you outside of God's boundaries. And so for that, even though it says a strange woman, probably because we need, as men, we're stupider, more warning, it applies to the strange man. You can say that if you're a lady. Be careful, because her lips drop as a honeycomb and her mouth is smoother than oil. She flatters. Sin flatters. She tells you nice-sounding things. You are so handsome. You are the smartest guy I know. Man, you look great in that outfit. Those jeans, I'll tell you what. Your husband's a lucky man. I mean, that's the words of the flattering man or woman. They drop as honeycomb. And you say, really? Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Tell me some more about me. Her mouth, it's smoother than oil. But, and here's the contrast, her end is bitter than as wormwood. She drops as honeycomb when she speaks, but at the end, it's bitter as poison. That girl's poison, boy. Her mouth is smoother than oil, but at the end, it's sharp as a two-edged sword. And the problem is, so many people, or so many times we, do not consider the end of the path. We think about the beginning, and we think about the upfront, and we don't think about the end. You know, you're going to go on a trip, you always check the destination before you buy the ticket. But how many people walk into relationships, walk into situations without ever thinking about where this is going to lead? What's it going to be like to be married to this person or to be stuck with this person? What's it going to, if I entertain this flattery, where's it going to lead in my relationship with my wife or my husband if I am listening to someone else trying to woo me away? Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold on hell. I think I'll go that way. That sounds great. Hell, death, love it. No, I mean, if you think about the end, of course not. Yeah, but it doesn't seem that bad right now. Well, lest you should ponder the path of her life. Her ways are movable, that you cannot know them. Don't think that it looks good right now, because it shifts. There's a change that happens. She's staggering, and you get on that path, and it will turn. And it looks like it's going in the same direction now, but you don't see the bend. The Lord does. That's why he says, stay away. Hear me now, therefore, O ye children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way far from her. Come not nigh the door of her house. Romans 13:14 says, put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. Just remove the temptation. Remove the situation. You know, to quote that sage of wisdom, Clint Eastwood, man's got to know his limitations. And everybody has different weaknesses, okay? I have friends who do not have a computer in their house. They don't have the internet because they know they can't deal with it. I appreciate that. I know a lot of guys who put in software, which they should. I know a lot of guys who, you know, Pastor Ken down there doesn't have the password to his computer at home. If he wants to get on the internet, he has to ask his wife or his daughter. There's wisdom in that. Guy's going to, you know, if something has a potential to lead you astray, removing thy way far from her, come not nigh. You know, some of you ladies, you can't get the Pampered Chef catalog, okay? Let's be honest. You just can't do it. You can't have the Lifetime channel. You just can't ruin it. You can't go buy the used book thing in the grocery store. All those romance novels people are turning in. Far from her. Come not nigh. Don't get near it, lest thou give thine honor unto others and thy years unto the cruel. You know, in the context of lust, he's talking about, there is not a crueler master than lust. It's like a fire that can never be put out. And the more you feed it, the worse it burns. Lest you give your honor to others, you lose your good name, your years unto the cruel. Lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger. Alimony. You have any, do you know, are you paying it? Do you know anybody who's paying it? I have friends who complain about it. She takes everything. Can't make nothing. Why? Because you cheated on her and left her. She deserves it. You gave your labor and your wealth to another. and your labors be in the house of a stranger, the house you built. He lives in it, and he raises your kids because you did something stupid. And thou mourn at the last when thy flesh and thy body are consumed. And then you say, how have I hated instruction and my heart despised reproof, and have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined mine ear to them that instructed me? I was almost in all evil in the midst of the congregation assembly. I was on the brink of utter ruin in some of the translations. If only, if only, if only. How many times, you know, do we or do others say, if only I hadn't done that stupid thing. I don't know what I was thinking. Rather, he says in verse 15, drink waters out of thine own cistern and running waters out of thine own well. In other words, there is a proper place for your thirsts, your desires to be satisfied out of your own cistern, out of your own well, out of your own wife, out of your own husband. Verse 16 says, let thy fountains be dispersed abroad and thy in rivers of waters in the street. Let them be be only thine own and not strangers with thee. The idea is, why should you let that which was supposed to be only for you be partaken of by others? Let them be only your own and not a stranger's with thee. Let thy fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. I call my wife, hey, wife of my youth. I do that on a regular basis to remind myself that she is the wife of my youth. Let her be as the loving hind in the pleasant roe. Let her be as a nice-looking deer. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished always with her love. You know, there are some good commands in the Bible. Do you know that? There's some really good commands. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 5. Married couples, defraud ye not one another, except it be with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. At King James, tough for us to catch the meaning. This is the New Living of the same thing. Do not deprive each other of sexual relations unless you both agree to refrain from sexual intimacy for a limited time, so you can give yourselves more completely to prayer. Afterward, you should come together again so that Satan won't be able to tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Thus is the word of the Lord. Have sex with your spouse. It's a good thing. You should do it regularly, often. It's beneficial for you. If you don't, you're more likely to be tempted. You know, he gives you command. He gives you the equipment to fulfill it. Amen. You know, Adam, here's your wife. Be fruitful, multiply. Yes, sir, I can do that command. It's a good thing. I don't know how I'm ever going to get through Song of Solomon, to be honest with you. This is very difficult for me with kids in the room. But I'm telling you, be thou ravished always with her love. It means intoxicated. Be drunk with her love. You know, the right thing with the right person in the right circumstance is incredible. The right thing with the wrong person is horrible. The right thing with the right person at the wrong time, bad news. A fire is intended to be built in the stove. Fire is a beautiful thing, especially this time of year. I love a fire in the morning. A fire in my living room and the stove is wonderful. A fire on my rug is not so wonderful. A fire likes to be fed. You know, if don't put wood on there. Don't sprinkle the fuel and then be surprised when it catches light. You know, I'm not going to go any further down there. Let her, I mean, it's a good thing. Let. And sometimes, you know, when you're young, you think, well, that's a wasted command. Let, like I need to be told to let. Of course I'm going to let. Every chance I can get, I'm going to let. Get older. Have some teenagers in the house. Get a job. Get a lot of, stress and everything. And sometimes you have to remember to let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. Why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman, with a forbidden woman or a forbidden man, and embrace the bosom of a stranger? Why would you do that? He's given you the means to satisfy yourself and others. For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his goings. I mean, if we really believe that, and we always kept it in our mind, that the Lord sees everything, he sees our heart. As Hebrews says, neither is any creature that's not manifest in his sight. All things are naked and open under the eyes of him with whom we have to do. That there's nothing we're doing that he isn't a party to. You know, that sign that we have in my house, it was one that my parents had in their house that I liked so much, they got for us a copy of it on our... as a wedding present. Was it Christ is the head of this home and the unseen guest at every meal, the silent listener of every conversation? I don't always live like that's true, because if I did, I'd probably speak differently to my wife and kids at times when I know I shouldn't. My remote control choices would be different. There'd be a lot of things would be different if we lived like that was true all of the time. But it is true. The ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his goings. His own iniquities shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sins, self-inflicted wounds. And especially in the sexual area, it is bondage, it is a trap, it is a snare. And he shall die without instruction for lack of discipline or self-control. That's what that means. And in the greatness of his fall, he shall go astray. And we all know that, right? We know it's true, but we all need to hear it again. So there, you've heard it. Grace and peace. No, let's pray that the Lord would give us wisdom. Father, we know your ways are true. We know your paths are right. We know, Lord, that even though Solomon messed up in this area heavily, as did David, his dad, it doesn't take away from the truth of your words. And Lord, David's family paid because of his mistakes. And Lord, Solomon's heart was led away from you because of his in this area. Lord, help us to listen and hearken, and to keep it always before our eyes. Lord, please lead us as you taught us to pray. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Father, I pray that this week you would help us to always ponder our paths. Lord, help your wisdom to be in our lips. Help us to guard our hearts. I ask it in Christ's name. Amen. Grace and peace, guys.